Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona Shaw, welcome back from all your travels.
Thanks, Mark. I come and go, as you can see.
You do. And with you today to help us with this, you have both Omar and Rebecca.
I have.
Hey, Rebecca. Hey, Omar.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hi, Mark.
Great to be back on here. You know, last week we had a huge week here in New York with USCIS. We had a stakeholders engagement on November 7th. And then we also held a conference, an EB5 conference with USCIS IPO on Friday, November 10th.
That's right. Congratulations. I heard it was a great event.
Thank you, Mark. But actually, the congratulations go to everybody. Events like this are a team effort. And this was the first time ever that USCIS were live on YouTube and that the Immigrant Investment Program Office actually has spoken at such an event.
That sounds great. Were there any takeaways?
Well, we have a number of takeaways from last week. We have a number of discussions. But this particular episode, Mark, is named We Spoke, USCIS Listened. And we are naming this episode that for a reason.
And now we are continuing to speak and more people are listening.
Well, right. I mean, the outreach is important because with a topic like EB5, it's so unique and different from all other immigrant programs. It's not immigration. It's not business. It's such a mix of everything that I do believe that people within the government and USCIS really need to hear our voices, and they need to hear our voices more often.
And what I liked about it, Mark, this is the first time Mona and I actually attended the stakeholders engagement live versus a teleconference. So we saw the difference. You know, it's time constraint. So of course, when you're on a teleconference, you're like, well, you know, I'm not getting my question in, or it becomes frustrating. When you're there live, you kind of see and you get to speak to everyone there and understand, like, you know, they are trying, they want to listen.
Right. I think one of the biggest takeaways, which for us was that, yes, these people are very human and they are bound by the constraints of the regulations. And it's how far things can perhaps be bent and how much discretion can come in. As well as the fact, I think, again, they just need to understand.
So the stakeholders engagement, essentially, USCIS is there to provide information, but they also take in some feedback on how things probably should go or how it's being implemented or impacting people in the real world. Is that what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they hear soliloquies from various different immigration attorneys every time, and these are real passion pleas. But at the end of the day, it has to be in conjunction with what's going on and their policy. And I think that the more opportunities that we have to get out the point that we are trying, the real life point that we're trying to get out, the more that USCIS do understand. And it kind of stops them from just coming up with, you know, arbitrary decisions.
It basically is the EB5 community coming together as a whole.
One thing I noticed is that on Friday, I think because USCIS's participation was voluntary, people were much nicer to them and more understanding. And then that also made USCIS, you know, much nicer and less formal in return. For example, during the stakeholders meetings, they always huddle and get together and get the perfect answer. We can't say this, we can't say that. On Friday, they didn't really give many different answers, but they were just much more straightforward and I don't know what the word is, but
it was less formal.
Less formal.
It was less formal, but at the same time, they were very much aware that people overseas were watching them. Because it was broadcast live by YouTube, we had a lot of emails and texts from people in the UAE, in the UK, in India. We know it was also being broadcast in China. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the Chinese TVs have recorded it all.
Exactly.
And they're going to translate it all and put it out there. So it's worldwide. And I think that USCIS, although they were guarded in what they had to say, you're right, Omar, they definitely were a lot less formal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Less formal and sounds like more collaborative.
Yes. Right.
Although yes. It couldn't really change policy, it sounds like a lot of back and forth was how policy is implemented and how things have been decided on. Obviously can't change policy, but some of the decisions that are handed down, does it really reflect policy or maybe interpretation?
Well, actually, I think one of the biggest takeaways from this was the issue relating to bridge financing. Now, with bridge financing, recently USCIS have come up with a number of RFEs which would really curtail bridge financing. And that is going to be a huge problem for a lot of projects. Right, Omar?
Yeah, so basically, USCIS has been saying that they basically don't want a project that's already financed anyway to claim that they're using bridge financing and then just coming in with EB5 money at a cheaper rate and the project would have been done anyway. But there's been a lot of complaints that USCIS isn't really understanding that, for example, even though on paper a loan might be 10 years, it's structured in such a way that everyone in the industry knows it's really intended to be bridge. On Friday, Jan seemed like he really took the feedback to heart.
Right. Yes, it wasn't just Jan, Omar. Julia Harrison also stated that they were going to go back and look at following our comments and everything they'd heard. They were going to go back and look at their policy.
Yeah, and Jan had a really memorable comment in my mind when he said, "We really don't want to impede business. We really want the industry to be able to move forward." So he seemed to be, you know, very seriously considering major changes from the RFEs and noise they've issued in the past few months and years.
Well, other than him, who else was at the stakeholders meeting?
Well, we had, so I'll give a breakdown. So Jan Lyons is the senior advisor for economics for the IPO. We also had Julia Harrison, who is the acting chief. And we also had Richard Murray, who is the division chief at adjudications.
There were others who were there, but these were the three main people who spoke.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Jan, Julie, Richard, and others. What were some of the big takeaways from this?
Okay, well, I think one of the first issues, which everybody wants to know, is about adjudication times. And this was repeated again on Friday. But what happened on Friday was that USCIS gave a presentation which initially seemed a little basic, and then we realized it wasn't basic at all and it was really needed, and it certainly went into a lot of issues. One of the big issues was the fact that in September of 2015, they were swamped and flooded with petitions. Those petitions, I think, Rebecca, they weren't the best done either, they were saying.
Yeah, so to put it in Jan's terms, he said they were garbage. And I quote him on that. But there was just so much volume. If you remember back in 2015, we were coming to the sunset in September, and then the first sunset, and then we had another one in December. And so everyone was trying to get in I-526 petitions or I-924 petitions for exemplar filings. And the quality was just so poor that they had to get through all that. And so it took them even longer to get through all those filings. I think now he said they're slowly getting through all those, but it probably will still take some time.
Yes, well, we are seeing that it still takes some time, but at least they explained it. And it's a little easier when you're trying to explain it to clients and investors who've been waiting for more than almost 2 years. But this is really the reason that mm-hmm. everything has been backlogged.
And we shouldn't, as a community, as practitioners, it just shows that we shouldn't be filing cases like that. If we can't get something in because of the deadline, then you're going to end up with more RFEs, noise, and denials.
Do you think that this is a common practice? And now, I know Mona Shaw and Associates doesn't file garbage petitions, but if USCIS is going through the backlog and that's what they're finding right now in the cases in 2015, do you think they're going to find similar, what they call garbage, for petitions filed in 2016 or maybe even earlier this year, 2017?
Well, I think because that was the first deadline, people were really panicked and mm-hmm. just thought, you know, I'll get my petition in, and even if I get an RFE or even annoyed, it's worth it because I want to get in the $500,000 investment amount. Or even projects were expected to be grandfathered at that time. Mm-hmm. So I actually do think he said that they were pretty close to done with that batch, And we might see processing times move pretty quickly once they get through that.
Right, but they did say that they're not following a strict first-in, first-serve sort of process, Rebecca, are they?
No, they're not. So what they're doing is that basically doing it based on the projects. If a project's approved, if you're lucky enough and you have your I-526 petition filed as an investor, you can, I don't want to say cut the line, but you have a faster adjudication time, let's say.
Right. And I think another big takeaway that we had, again, which shows the human side of USCIS, we are saying all these wonderful things now. I hope they live up to this, was the fact that what they were considering to doing relating to the adjudication of backlog cases from mainland China.
Mm. Yeah, that was a very, very important point. It came out both at the stakeholders meeting and at the EB5 conference on Friday. What they were trying to do and considering is to hold back adjudication of backlog cases awaiting visas. So this could be at the consular processing stage or the adjustment of status stage. This would help with age-out cases, basically. So if your I-526 is pending for a longer time, then that you can use that for any age-out cases. And IPO really did say they wanted more feedback on this issue.
Yeah. I think that's what they asked all the way through, that they were looking for feedback. And we saw that they were listening.
Exactly. Another issue they also brought out, Mark, you know, a lot of people were kind of concerned about these audits that they were talking about. So they did discern that they're now calling it Regional Center Compliance Review. And it's also distinguished from site visits.
But Omar, is that sort of an RC thing or is it an SEC issue?
It's an RC thing. There's not really, the SEC is not involved at all. I mean, the one thing that it might tie in with securities is that they probably want to make sure that you're complying with securities law. So making sure you have your accredited investor forms and things like that. Mm. But that's probably only a small part of the review.
Oh, but Jan did say that they went to a project which they couldn't find on Google Maps and they weren't even sure it existed. And when he got there, there was this huge construction site and everything working.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I guess that's both the SEC and just, you know, making sure it meets the requirements of the EB-5 program.
As far as you're aware, SEC are not coming along with us, with USCIS?
No, it didn't sound to me, based on what they were saying, that there was as much collaboration with the SEC as one might think. I mean, obviously, they're in communication, but I think each people kind of have their own little kingdom. The other thing I took away from it was that they really did not have, they're going into it kind of just making it up as they went along, which people kind of figured anyway. But she basically said, I think it was Julia, said, we're going to finish our first one. And then once we, you know, get through that experience, we'll tell you how we're going to do the future one. So that was interesting.
Yeah, but all the way through, both at the stakeholders meeting and on Friday, they did have the emphasis that they wanted to help businesses, but they were going to keep an eye on cases for fraud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rebecca, they discussed having an 829 team. What was all that about?
Yeah, so back in March, they had discussed this. They spoke about having a team where they would put combining the economists and adjudicators. And it actually, they saw that this is actually helping processing times move along faster. So they're actually putting this, moving forward with this on I-526 adjudications as well. So hopefully we do see faster processing times for the I-526 as well, as they have found it with the I-29.
Right, but they did state that direct EB-5 petitions have a separate queue from regional center petitions, and they did state that 98% of the petitions were regional center petitions. Only 2%. I would think that that proportion will change this year because we've seen a lot more direct and direct pooled. Do you think it would be faster, Rebecca, if somebody filed a direct because there's much less people and it's a different queue?
Well, I think it will be faster because there's no economic report to review. As far as they're saying that, you know, projects are being looked at, you know, as they come in, and then they will be put into a team who reviews the documents. So if the economist doesn't need to review an economic report, then adjudication should be faster.
You know, we did discuss a bit of economics in one of the panels. And Omar, we did have a whole panel on SEC, and I believe your panel was called The Red Flag.
Yeah, just highlighting basic issues that investors could look out for, you know, that would be a red flag.
A red flag for what, though?
Two things, getting their money back and getting their green card, which is the two things that I'd say the green card is the main thing that investors are looking for. So you'd want to make sure the things we talked about were making sure that your project met all the requirements of the EB-5 program. And we highlighted certain words to look out for example, guarantees and redemptions. Everyone should know that's a big no-no. we did have some people after the panel asking, well, can this one thing be guaranteed? And there are exceptions to the rule, but generally guarantees are bad. And then we were talking about things like the EB-5 team, the economists, the attorneys, and things like that, making sure that they had experience so they would know what things to look out for.
Yeah, but every time, I'm sorry to say, but your panel comes up, a lot of us go, oh, this is going to be dull.
Well, in this one instance, we tried to make it, I mean, because maybe, you know, the attorneys and projects aren't interested.
You had a fun panel, that I have to admit.
But the investors, I mean, I think they're very interested in that kind of thing. Especially when you know, talk out about a high level, like basic things they can look out for, rather than, oh, well, this is what a PPM is.
I would say that it's more important than ever to do it now, because a lot of people have moved away from just China and have moved to the rest of the world. There isn't any kind of education. I mean, the Chinese are very sophisticated when it came to EB-5 and immigration generally, but the rest of the world isn't. And there's a lot of non-registered people who really don't understand the program and who are out there in these countries making things up.
Yeah, China was more of a developed market, and you had agents who had been doing it for a long time. So maybe the first time they looked into EB-5, they didn't know what a PPM was and business plan and all those things. But, you know, by 2015, they definitely knew. Whereas in all these new markets, they're kind of like a re-education process starting all over again.
Right. And many of the topics we probably touched on the Friday conference were probably over the head of a lot of people. But I felt that they still needed to be said, like redeployment.
Yeah, I think redeployment is over a lot of people's heads, even people in the industry.
And bonds.
Yeah. Well, we avoided bonds. Yeah, we decided that we would take bonds out. Otherwise, bonds was going to be a part of it. But with redeployment, though, there were a few of us who had very firm ideas about how and where redeployment should be going.
Yeah, I think a lot of clients, when they first hear redeployment, referring to project clients, they get excited because they're like, oh, well, I can do whatever I want with the money. And then you start telling them, no, like, you have a lot of responsibilities and duties, and you should actually avoid redeployment unless you need to.
Well, the redeployment panel, we also spent a few minutes on possible solutions. And straight after that panel, when Julia Harrison came out and spoke, she said they were listening, and she said, you guys are giving us solutions. Again, they were listening.
And I think one of the points that she brought up, Mono, and I think you spoke on this, was discretion.
Yes. Well, here's the issue with discretion. I mean, I did bring up the point that there are a lot of human factors which happen with cases, and we're blurring the line with rough and harsh business and then the human element. And in every other area, there is this discretion by USCIS. Of course, with the adjudication of the green card, there's this discretion. But they did say they weren't so sure about a discretion on some of the areas relating to the 526 adjudications. But this, you may remember, John Pratt from IRA's office, Correspondent's office, he stated that they did have a discretion with related to policy change.
No, I think she mentioned that in other green cards, the discretion is baked into the statutes, and it's not in 526. Mm-hmm. And then, as you've mentioned, John Pratt said, well, you do have discretion as far as policy.
Right. That was one of the good things we found, that there was a lot of interactive comments from both the audience and the listeners and USCIS. So we did discuss a lot to do with actual EB-5 policy and the project side. But issues relating, for a lot of investors, the issues are relating to source of funds. And Rebecca, you had a whole panel on source of funds, and you did touch on some of the issues which really surprised me.
A very lively panel.
Yes, it was. I was going to say.
Hard to shut them up. We kept saying, Mark, 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 0 minutes, minus 5 minutes.
Omar is just saying that because you were saying that his panels are typically boring. So now he's saying that Rebecca's panel was rowdy. That's all.
What can I say? And we were coming off of lunch. So, I had a great panel. You know, I had Jinhee Weil, Genevieve Romain, Nima Corporevara, and Dan Schwartz. Great group. You know, we brought out concerns, not telling you how to actually, you know, what documents are needed for a source of funds. We kind of went on and took it further. Well, how much is too much? You know, the regs, Jinhee brought out a good point. The regs, you know, are vague and they're broad. And they don't really tell you exactly what documents are actually needed.
Right. Well, Genevieve, she oversees all the petitions for Extel. And she said that she's seen thousands of petitions and all different sizes and
exactly.
types.
So it depends too. You know, us as practitioners, some are sending in paragraphs on a source of funds and others are sending in, you know, 4 or 5 pages. Because a lot of times, you know, Nima brought out another good point as well. USCIS doesn't understand where the investors are coming from. You know, we're all each coming from different countries, different backgrounds. You know, a lot of these countries do not have the same banking or Western systems that we have here in the U.S., and they're not taking that into consideration. So, for instance, in the UAE...
I think you guys said that like at least 5 times. USCIS, please note, everyone is not on the Western banking system.
That was one of the major points that we had to bring out there, that, you know, like, for instance, the UAE doesn't, you know, why are we asking for taxes if the UAE doesn't have that? So, you know, we brought those points out in for us as practitioners to let USCIS know that we have to put in the background information. And that's why our source of funds memos are a bit longer because we're just, you know, we're not sure what USCIS is exactly looking for. So from our point of view, if we can't submit a certain document, we try to explain why we can't submit those documents or, you know, the background of the person. So very good panel. It was great having Genevieve as well because she's part of a regional center and hearing it from a regional center perspective versus us as attorneys in the firm. It was a really, really good panel.
Right. Well, so we covered obviously policy and things like source of funds and SEC, but we also really had a full panel and a very interesting panel on legislation and updates. And on that particular panel, we were it was wonderful because we had Angel Bruner. We also had the two professors from NYU Stern who have done so much research in this area. Those two are Gary Friedland and Jean Cauldron. And we also were lucky enough to have Leon Rodriguez, who was a former USCIS director. And of course, Manuel Ortiz from Civitas. What was so significant about all these people is, for example, Civitas are very involved in what's going with legislation, as is Angel Brunner. She seemed to know everything and anything that was being said.
I think she's on every single group that's out there, from IUSA to EB5 Coalition and even EB5 Roundtable.
That's right.
Chamber of Commerce.
That too. And she basically stated, because everybody's fear was the regs coming in, and she stated that the regs are being used as a hammer by
Grassley.
By Grassley and others in Congress. And then the other big thing was that Leon was able to tell us that, well, even though the regs might come in April, they don't come in April. There's a lot of formalities which happens before that.
Yeah, April is just a target date, and he was suggesting that they usually don't meet the target.
Omar, did you take away from that legislative panel that if they do not come up with a deal by April, we could have another year of the current status quo?
That sounded very possible. I wouldn't advise our clients to bet on that, but it sounded like there's still a lot of uncertainty and it could still go in a lot of different directions.
Yeah, because I didn't even realize that the regs could be challenged and they could all be constitutional challenges and they could, you know, you could be tied up in the court for years with that.
Yeah, I think what they do is challenge the process because, as you know, USCIS took probably thousands of comments when they put out the regs that us and other people put in, and then I haven't actually done this, but I think from my understanding is they say, well, you didn't consider this comment, you didn't consider that comment, and that could take forever.
That's right. Well, also, the regs were written under the Obama administration, but now they're being implemented by the Trump administration, and the current administration as well is very pro-Grassley because you have Cessna and you have others.
That's right.
So speaking about Obama administration versus Trump administration, the EB-5 program has seen that. And us, you know, on the panel that I led with Source of Funds, you know, we haven't seen that yet when it comes to adjudicating the I-526 petitions, but we have seen it at the consular processing stage.
Oh, it's being a nightmare at the consular processing stage. And of course, the IPO couldn't really talk of that because that wasn't their then purview.
Exactly. But it's just, you know, at least we got to, you know, have our voice out there. And another issue that, you know, I know I'm going into my panel a bit more here too, was the when they're changing adjudication, they're doing it midstream. And so what's happening is that, we're not getting enough time to understand where USCIS is coming from. And then there's petitions that are going in that we're, you know, following the rules and regulations or interpretations that we followed years before, even just months before, and getting approvals. And then all of a sudden they're coming back with RFEs, which ultimately led to denials. So one of the other good points we had was that not only is it hurting the investors, the projects as well, they're being held back. They're not able to take out, you know, use the money where they're supposed to be using. They're having investors coming back and asking for a return of their funds because they can't answer the RFEs or the NOIDs. And instead of having a denial, they'd rather just withdraw and refile. And in addition, that's also showing it as a denial rather than a withdrawal. So USCIS said they're also working on that at the EB5 stakeholders engagement. They did mention that they're considering making sure they keep withdrawals separate from denials.
Yeah, because then the figures then all get skewed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I heard from a lot of people is it's fine if you want to change the policy, but make it clear and make it prospective. Mm-hmm. You can't have someone filing a petition 2 years ago based on policy that everyone understood and then have it adjudicated 2 years later under a completely different standard.
Right. Yeah, that I think was the big complaint from everybody, from both at the stakeholders meeting and at the conference on Friday. By the way, Mark, the conference, if anybody still wants to watch it, they are able to access it. It's still on YouTube. Currently, we don't have it separated and we just have the one long, the full day. We have the link up on our website, but we will eventually, once it's actually properly formatted, then it'll go back on YouTube and you can actually just watch individual panels.
That sounds great. And we'll also make sure that there's a link to that YouTube video in our show notes. Well, this outreach is great, and I understand that USCIS wants to continue with their outreach. Mona,
that's
Omar,
right.
Rebecca, thank you so much for sharing these updates with us on EB5 Investment Voice.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.